Welcome to Coach to Coach, a podcast dedicated to showcasing the power of coaching. I'm your host, Dr. Katie Linder, and I offer coaching to academics and higher education professionals to bring more ease to their lives and work. Before you dive into this episode, here's a quick introduction to the structure of the show. In each season of Coach to Coach, a new guest coach will come on the show to demonstrate a range of coaching tools and strategies. The first episode will offer you an introduction to the guest coach. Then I'll coach the guest, and they'll coach me for the next six episodes. And always on real topics and issues we're dealing with in our own lives. Each season will end with a debrief episode where we'll talk about how the season went and offer any updates on the topics covered in earlier episodes. It might make the most sense to start each season in the beginning and listen to the episodes in order. This season, I'm delighted to introduce you to Dr. Katie Peplin. Katie specializes in working with graduate students and offers them a community and network to support their needs and help them to live whole lives while pursuing their degrees. Now, on to the episode. Hey, Katie, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm excited to switch roles, and I am coaching you today. So what do you want to focus on in the session?
Today, I would love to focus on marketing my business, because I love making products, and I love when clients use them, and I love talking to people one-on-one, but I don't always love, like, marketing. Mm-hmm. So I think part of it is that it isn't I don't think it would be my favorite task in any situation, but it's definitely hard as a self-employed, this is the only, if I don't do it, nobody else does kind of mood.
So. Right. Okay. And what is making this kind of top of mind for you right now?
Top of mind for me right now is that I have a bunch of new things. So we had talked last time about my finish it July, where I was getting a bunch of stuff kind of like done and out the door. And it seeped a little bit into August, as things always do. But I've got a few things in the pipeline that are ready to sort of be pushed out. But I don't have great marketing plans for them. And I'm finding a lot of internal resistance around making them.
Well, and last time we did talk about kind of that 80% slowdown. Yeah. And do you feel like this is connected to that in any way?
It definitely feels related. So I would say that most of my projects are now in the 90 to 95% done space. So our session last time definitely unblocked some things and I could move a bunch of stuff forward, but I still am hesitating right at the finish line.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, and that is when you have to start figuring out the marketing situation. So
yeah, it really is. Yeah.
Okay. So by the end of today's session, what are you hoping for? What would be a good outcome that would help you move forward with this?
A good outcome would be sort of feeling energized about marketing. I don't necessarily need a full-blown marketing plan, but a lack of resistance to the idea of marketing would be great. Mm-hmm. Or less resistance.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like kind of a mindset shift around marketing would be.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Okay. So when you say or think about the word marketing,
yeah,
what does that mean to you?
I mean, it means a bunch of different things. It means in my head, self-promotion or promotion of products, which feels very tied to the self because despite my best efforts, I always make things that are personal to me or that I'm really invested in, which I think is good. I don't necessarily want to undo that, but self-promotion is the closest analog, I think.
Mm-hmm. And what does self-promotion mean to you?
It means sharing, letting people know. I have a colleague, Jane, and she likes to think about marketing as there are lots of people that I know out there that I could help or that could use my service. And this is my way of being marketing is the lighthouse that helps people find what they need.
Hmm.
And I like that as a metaphor. But I will admit that sometimes it also feels kind of gross, like this is what I have and this is what you should buy. And I don't always love that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
The like encouraging people to spend money. Because
mm-hmm.
I think there's like authentic ways to do that. And then there's sort of like disingenuous ways.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you love to spend your money on?
Oh, yarn. No, I love to support like independent businesses. So right now my like free time has been taken up. There's a Steel Valley yarn crawl. I live in Pittsburgh and there's like 11 different yarn shops and they're all, you know, independently owned. And so today I'm going to the last two and I find myself even like 100% drawn to cell phone businesses or like small owned businesses or collectively owned businesses and not chains. And then even within those, I'm very drawn to products that I either know the maker individually or I know of them or it's like a single person. And it's important to me that, especially even in like discretionary, silly spending, that the companies meet. Like match up with my values. And I wouldn't say that's like 100%. Like I still shop at Amazon sometimes. Like I still go to like big box stores sometimes, but I feel the best when I'm spending money and supporting individuals. And especially when I feel like I'm values aligned with those individuals.
Mm-hmm. So what are the kinds of emotions you feel when you are handing over that money and it's aligned with your values and you know it's going to a good place?
I feel really good. Like I just recently dropped the biggest chunk of money and like, it's $75, which is like a lot of money for me to spend on yarn. And I handed it directly to the person who made the yarn, like dyed it. She didn't spin it, but she did dye it. And I felt really good. Like I felt like it was an equal exchange that I was rewarding her for her time and effort. And in exchange, I was getting back this beautiful yarn that I will spend probably 2 months making into like a big cardigan, which is exciting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What would it take for your clients to
have
that same kind of value exchange where they're like happy to be purchasing the thing that you're selling?
Yeah. Well, I think that they would need to have like a clear sense of what they'll be like getting in return.
Mm-hmm.
So like a clear sense of, and that also they have an understanding of the value of it, sort of like the monetary value, but also like the value it will have in their lives. So whether or not that's like, skills building or like space holding. And I think they would also take a sense of kind of awareness of the fact that that money does compensate me and my very small one person, three cat business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think that my clients like to know that that money isn't necessarily going like it's allowing me to continue to create in the future.
Mm-hmm. What are you currently doing to communicate those things to your clients about what they could be purchasing?
Yeah. I'm sharing things on Twitter. I have a website with all of my stuff on it. I do send out like a weekly newsletter that I try and have like a pretty clear balance between so that there's something for value that people like something valuable that people are getting for free every week, whether that's like a book review or a worksheet or like a mini blog post. Like I try and balance valuable things that I am sharing freely with other products that people would have to invest in too. Because I'm very conscious, as opposed to some other businesses, I don't want all of my stuff behind a paywall because I know that my clients are grad students that don't have unlimited budgets and have to think really hard about the purchases that they're making. So I don't want anybody to ever feel like they have to pay a certain amount of money to receive any benefit from me or my company. Like I want there to be stuff that's freely available.
Okay. What assumptions are you making about your clients and their financial situation?
I definitely am assuming that all clients have, if not like limited resources, finite resources, I guess I would say, that both in terms of money and time, that grad students have really busy schedules. They're often not only just grad students. So when I'm thinking about offerings, I'm definitely thinking about time as a limited resource as much as I'm thinking about money as a limited or a finite resource. And I do know that there are some graduate students that have a lot more flexibility in their schedule. And I know that there's some grad students that have a lot more flexibility in their budgets. But I do tend to assume when I picture my, like, my client, that those resources are both finite. Like, I know that other kinds do exist, but that's the sort of assumption that I make for everybody. Mm-hmm.
What's the relationship between those assumptions and how you shape your marketing?
I try to make my marketing clear that I know that grad students have to invest in my paid services. So I want them to feel like I take that seriously, that I take that as a vote of confidence, and that I value that engagement very, very much. So I try never to use language that's like fear-based, really, like that this will go away if you don't. I am, the one thing that I will say is that I do communicate when spots are limited. So like I will say, you know, there's only 3 spots left or there's only 5 spots left, but I try never to be like, oh, well, if you don't do this, it's going away forever. Because like, I don't know that and they don't know that really. So I try not to be like, oh, you know, I try never to use language that's like, if you don't do this, or if you don't sign up for this, it'll be harder for you, or you'll struggle more. I do try and focus on the, like, if you do engage with this, things will be easier, as opposed to if you don't do this, things will be harder, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you want your clients to feel once they've made a purchase from your business?
I want them to feel ultimately that they've invested in themselves as much as they've, as much as possible, so that they can feel good about that purchase, not only being something that supports my business, but something that's an investment in their future, whether that's the future of them finishing, or a future of more professional clarity, or a future of like stronger writing. I want them to feel like this is a concrete way that they've made a commitment to themselves and their work, that this will move them forward in the direction that they want to go.
Mm-hmm. What do you do after they purchase to help them celebrate that and feel those feelings?
Yeah. So I try and have like confirmation messages that are really like exciting. I try and build excitement for people. So a lot of my offerings, people buy them in advance and then they start on a certain date. So I have intake forms where they can sort of like get started, and I have questionnaires where I get to know them better. Like I try and structure those first interactions as a period of like getting to know one another so that we can hit the ground running and kind of like build excitement. Like, mm-hmm. I would feel sad if my customers felt like they were ignored between the time of purchase and, you know, like forevermore, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. Mm-hmm. Like, I want them to feel ongoing engagement.
Mm-hmm. What do you share with people who are considering buying that would help them to know that that's the kind of relationship that gets built post-purchase?
I do offer like free 30-minute calls to anybody who's considering any of my services. So during those calls, I let people know in a little bit more detail, like what, like questions that they have. Like I try and frame those calls as like, if you have questions, I want to answer all of them so that you feel confident that you're making a good decision with your time and your resources. So in those calls, I often share like sneak peeks of the platform, or like I pull up like a dummy account so they can see the coaching platform that I use, or the community spaces that I run. And I like to be really clear in those calls that I value privacy. So like I won't show another client's page, you know what I mean? Like I try and model the same respect that I would give them as a client. So it's totally confidential. And I definitely try to be as open as I can about what the experience will be like so that people can have a good sense without putting on a bunch of like undue pressure, if that makes sense. Like I often feel a little bit of stickiness around like follow-ups. So if you read any marketing book, it's like, oh, you have to do, you know, like X number of follow-ups to really help people like feel the pressure to get them to sign on. And I don't love that. Like I try to structure my follow-up correspondence, whether it's like that call or kind of like a reminder that things are open, with as much information, like this does go away on Monday or like doors close on Tuesday, but without the like the sense that I'm hounding people. Because if they've decided that it's not a good fit for them, then that is an okay outcome for me.
Mm-hmm. What does it mean to you, Katie, to just do marketing on your own terms?
It feels uncomfortable. I'm an obliger. So like in the sort of like four tendencies, like I do well with like outside accountability. I do well with a sort of sense that like somebody else is giving me a set of rules and I'm following them and like doing a good job following them. And so I have definitely met and encountered a lot of colleagues where books or experts where I read things and I'm like, oh, this part of it resonates, but this part of it definitely doesn't. And I do sometimes like the fear languaging that I get is like, well, if you would just commit to that 20% that you feel like doesn't resonate with you, you'd have better outcomes. Not that I have bad outcomes, but like, I do feel a sense of pressure to commit whole hog to somebody else's vision of marketing, even if I know it doesn't resonate with me, in order to see like the best results, if that makes sense. Like there's always this like mythical 20% more that I worry I could be getting if I used, you know, more firm sales tactics or something like that.
What would it mean to you to get that mythical 20% more?
It would definitely be a little bit more flexibility in terms of like what my day to day would look like. I fantasize about having a virtual assistant sometimes. There's a variety of things in my business that like I've automated them, but they do take me, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And it's not that much time that I can sort of justify an ongoing cost. But like, I think that I would have a little bit more space to do some of the higher level content creation on a quicker pace if I could afford to hire somebody to do some of the more automated stuff. But right now I'm not at a pain point enough where it's worth giving that part of my budget up. And I think with that mythical 20%, I would have it.
Mm-hmm. When you think about marketing, what would enough look like?
Enough would look like I had consistently engaged with offerings. I think everybody's stuff kind of goes in a little bit of a cycle where like things go up and down. And I definitely have enough to sort of like weather down periods. But I would love more consistency in different seasons. Like summers are slow for me. And so I would love a little bit more engagement in the summer. So more consistency, I guess.
So you seem to imply consistency with your clients. Do you also mean consistency with your own marketing efforts?
Yeah. Marketing is the first thing that like everybody's got that like first thing that tips off of their to-do list. when they're tired, and marketing is 100% the first thing that I tip off my to-do list. Like the first thing to go is my scheduled posts on Instagram, partially because I don't love making them and partially because I don't know how effective they are. So like, I have all sorts of rationale, but like, if there's one thing that I'm scrambling to do day of that I don't like to, it's often like scheduling tweets. Even though I really like being on Twitter and it's been a really effective marketing piece for me. Like, mm-hmm. I just don't love doing it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You mentioned wanting to have different energy around your marketing.
Yeah.
What's your current energy around your marketing?
That sound, whatever that sound is.
I was going to say, you've made some noises throughout this session.
It's not like a full body disgust. It's just a, like, I don't want to. Not that I won't do it, but like, if you've ever seen like a smaller kid putting away toys and they're stomping just like 20% more than they need to, like they're putting away the toys, but they're making it clear that they don't particularly want to. That's how I feel. Like I'm putting away my toys, but I'm stomping a little bit. So it's clear to everybody that I don't want to.
Okay.
And I'd like to just put away my toys.
Okay. So you want to clear out the stomping.
Yeah.
Experience.
Yeah.
So what would it mean for you to market with more ease?
It would mean like less procrastination about those tasks. Like often they're the last thing on my to-do list. And like, it's that like I could start knitting or I could write tweets. Mm-hmm. So I think it would be more ease if that came earlier in the day, instead of being like the last thing that I have to force myself to do. I would love to feel more creative with it. And I think that's part of where the like foot stomping comes in, is that it feels very like rote and mechanical, and I don't want to feel rote and mechanical about something. Mm-hmm. That's as important as this. So I guess more ease would look like a lot more creativity with it. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned you're writing these things kind of later in the day. Are you also writing these things where like they need to go out tomorrow? Like it's kind of at the last minute, or do you give yourself some buffer time?
Ideally I write tweets like a whole week at a time. and I had been doing that on Fridays, and that was a bad plan. Because I have like senioritis on Fridays and I don't want to. And so I've for the last couple of weeks, I've been doing it on Tuesdays, and that's been really effective. In that I get them done and I don't, with a little bit more ease. Sometimes I'm definitely writing them the day before. And sometimes I'm even writing them the morning of, which I don't mind all the time because sometimes I feel like it's a little bit fresher, but it definitely causes me some stress to wake up in the morning and know I only have tweets programmed through 10 a.m. or something. That's mm-hmm. not great.
My sense is just from what you've described that what you're marketing is pretty consistent. Like you have cycles of when things open and when they close, and you kind of know what those things are in advance.
Yeah.
What would it mean to you to maybe schedule and draft some of that stuff like a quarter ahead of time?
Just like practically speaking, there's a limit. I'm on like a buffer plan that only lets me schedule so many tweets ahead of time. And I don't know that it's worth it to pay the next tier up, which is like, I think almost double what I'm paying now, to schedule a whole quarter ahead of time. I also don't know. I'm open to doing like 2 weeks at a time. But part of why I think that I have some success on Twitter is that it's clear. Somebody, I was talking to a client once and I was like, oh yeah, I have to schedule tweets. And they were like, I would not know that your tweets were scheduled. And I was like, yes, it's working. Mm-hmm. That there's a certain amount of like freshness and authenticity that I would worry would lose. I would lose some of that if I was doing, you know, just like one marathon Saturday where I just programmed 1,000 tweets or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I hear you want
to do more than a week at a time, I guess.
Okay. What would that look like for you to do more than a week at a time?
There would need to be some bribery involved like, in terms of like what it would get to get me to sit down and do that many at a time. I'd need like a special pastry. I live down the street from a bakery. I tend not to go there all the time because their pastries are beautiful, but decadent. And I think that I would need a Danish.
Okay.
As a reward.
So what if you were to create a retreat space for yourself, or like a marketing retreat or a social media drafting retreat?
Yeah.
And it had a pastry and it had a schedule that you created. Like, I'm already seeing you like physically react to this as if it's not something you want to do.
Yeah.
What do you feel when you think about like putting some structure around this?
Well, part of it is just that like, I love retreats. And I love them for like, I use them quite a bit. I probably have like a retreat or a retreat-ish space once a month easily. But in my head, retreats are things that are for like deep focus work. They're for like losing yourself in the beginning of a project. Like, it's a very special space to me. Mm-hmm. I don't want to use that word for writing tweets. You know what I
mean? Okay, so it would like sully the retreat space if you were to like let the tweets encroach on that versus letting the retreat idea and the positivity you have bleed over into the negativity you have for the tweet writing.
Like, I think that the idea of setting aside some time and making it feel special would be useful. But I'm thinking about it more like those days that you kind of like plan ahead of time to just like do like a long standing task. Like, I don't know if you ever do that, but like sometimes for house chores, we were like, oh, okay, we're going to stain the deck this weekend. And we do plan for it. It doesn't feel like a retreat exactly, but it does feel like something that takes some plan and effort. And there's the reward of a long standing task well done.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what can you call that? To kind of separate it out in your mind and on your calendar as a kind of special thing?
A work day.
Is that different from other things that you do?
Yes. Yes. Like a work day. Yeah, that feels good.
And what would that work day look like?
It would look like a good breakfast. Like, and it would look like some time in the morning to kind of like try and tap into any creative energy about it. Like, I think like I'm picturing myself like kind of spending some time in the morning of a work day around marketing, tapping into like themes and like setting up colors and like downloading images and kind of like making a mood board. And then, because that stuff I love doing, actually. And then using some of that energy to fuel the rest of the day. And then a Danish at the end.
I was going to say, where does the pastry fall? Because that's going to be an important element.
Yeah, the Danish is at the end. That's an explicitly reward Danish, for
okay.
sure.
Okay. What, you mentioned the mood board. Are there other things that inspire you? What inspires you when it comes to thinking about marketing?
I mean, my degree is in cinema and media studies, and so it's not explicitly a marketing degree. And people who are in fields like communications do more explicit work with marketing, but it's definitely related to my degree of study. And so the parts of it that are energizing to me are like looking around on Instagram and being like, oh, this is really effective, and kind of like reverse engineering other people's marketing that I'm drawn to. And there definitely is a sense that I get of accomplishment when I like reverse hack something else. Like, I remember feeling really proud and inspired when I had made my first like marketing funnel without ever really reading a book about what a marketing funnel was. I just like paid attention to email campaigns that worked for me. And then I was like, oh, there's like this bigger one. And then there's a more narrow, and then I clicked this. So I must've gotten in, and I kind of like I reverse engineered it. And then I remember reading it in a book and being like, oh, I understood what a funnel was just by like going through one myself. Mm-hmm. And so I do get a sense of like pride and intellectual engagement, looking at marketing as kind of a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And then like remaking that puzzle for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So that part of it is energizing.
I get the sense you like to hack things.
I do like to hack things. I have talked about this on a couple of other podcasts, but like I take a lot of pride in my business. And I think that's one of the things that keeps it really fresh and engaging for me is finding puzzles and solving them. Mm-hmm. So like sometimes that puzzle is like low engagement in my community. And then sometimes that puzzle is like, how do I get the word out about this? But it's not that I never like look to experts, because I do, I read a lot of books, but, and like sometimes that's part of the hacking process, but I like the sense of ownership that I have, because every single part of my business, I know how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And like I've met other people who definitely enjoy the spaciousness that they feel by being like, oh, I have a person and they like handle my email lists, or you know what I mean? And like, I just say, these are my steps and I would like for you to execute them. And that is not how I don't feel good about that. Mm-hmm. I like to know intimately how it all works, so that when it breaks at 10 PM, if it breaks, I know how to do it. And I'm not beholden to somebody else to come and fix things for me.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the puzzles that you're trying to solve right now with marketing?
Some of the puzzles are, how do I create a safe enough space for people to feel like they can engage with it? And so how do I communicate to people that my offerings won't add to their sense, to like their negative feelings around their work? Because a lot of the offerings that I have do sort of like help people get unstuck, or it helps them sort of restart. And I'm very conscious of the fact that a lot of people have expressed to me, and I can deeply empathize with the idea of like, why would I spend all of this money to just not use this tool either? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I like that puzzle's really interesting to me, and I feel like I'm going to be chewing on that one forever. I'm interested in the puzzle of how do I reach people that aren't on social media? Because it's only a smaller subsection of grad students that encounter me that way. And I'm interested in the puzzle of how do I communicate the cohesiveness of my brand through marketing?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting to me.
Where do you devote time to thinking about these puzzles in kind of the day-to-day of your business?
I don't have a lot of explicit time. It's usually the marketing things, they come to me quickly and all at once. Like when I decided to do something for Academic Writing Month, ACRIMO, that was something that I chewed on, I think, like low level for many weeks. And then it came out all as a rush and it was done in like 2 days, like everything was done. And I think that that is my process for a lot of marketing, that like in a lot of my content creation too, that it's something that I'm working on with like 30% of my brain as I'm doing other things. And then when it's ready to come out, it comes out all at once.
Mm-hmm. To what degree are you sharing your process as you're creating new things and starting to generate kind of these new ideas of what you think might turn into products for your business?
None. 0.0%.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, what would that look like in terms of incorporating some of the process into what you share as a kind of informal marketing to let people know how your values are being infused into these products and the why behind what you're creating?
Oh, that's really interesting. I've never thought about that as a strategy that I could use. Like I've seen like you effectively use it in like a variety of different things. And Partly it's because my process is a little bit black box, even to me, that like ideas go in and then there's like something that happens in my brain and then out comes like a writing course.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know how I would effectively communicate some of that, if only because I don't always know what happens in that black box.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so that was true of me in my writing. It's true of me sort of when, it's not true during my teaching, actually. Like I practiced enough as a teacher to be able to sort of explicitly be able to stop like a lesson if I was teaching like a model example and stop and be like, this is what I'm doing and why.
Mm-hmm.
But it was definitely a skill I had to work on. A lot of my life experience is very much that I'm so in the zone when I'm doing it, that I definitely have to like stop and pause and then work back through
mm-hmm.
the steps I was taking. It happens really quick in my brain.
Mm-hmm. So, you seem intrigued by the idea of sharing process.
I'm intrigued by it. Yeah, I don't know. Right now I'm thinking about that joke from South Park, the underpants gnomes.
Okay, I do not know this reference at all, and our listeners may not either. So you may.
Yeah. So the underpants gnomes are people that like, and it has been 15 years since I've seen this episode of South Park, but like, there's some sort of gremlin or creature, and I'm horribly going to butcher this, and I will look up an explanation and have it available so you can put it in the show notes for people. But like.
Okay.
The part that's sticking in my mind is that there's these things and they steal like socks and underwear, and like it's like step one, get underpants, and then step two, they shrug, and then step three is profit.
Okay, that's a very good metaphor for what we're talking about right now.
And that's exactly. And so like step two, like I know it's in there. But yeah, it would be interesting to try and make some of that more explicit instead of just being like step two.
Mm-hmm. Lots of shrug emojis going on here.
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
What would be a first step to trying to articulate, you know, not even to other people, but just to yourself, what some of that middle shrug moment looks like in terms of process?
Well, I think that it's something that could come up in my morning pages, like if I was explicit about engaging that. So like you, I do morning pages. I don't always do them first thing in the morning, though. I often do them when my brain gets kind of busy, which happens anytime between mid-morning and when I'm about to go to sleep. Like, it's not uncommon for me to like stop and have to just like dump. And so I think it's a question that I could explicitly prompt with myself. Like, what did you do today, self? Like, what were you chewing on? I also think that it could be something productive for me to think about as I'm running and working out, because it's a space that I have that is a good time where my body is captive mm-hmm. and like my brain can kind of roam. But I think it's a matter of kind of like explicitly prompting that as a topic during space I already have to chew on things.
Mm-hmm. What are you already sharing about process in any part of your life on things like social media spaces where you might also share about business process?
In process, nothing. Like, it's a personal boundary for me about a lot of things. Like there, I remember once talking to a client and was like, I feel like I know what's going on exactly with you day to day because you're so open on social media. And that is a well-crafted magic trick of misdirection mm-hmm. in that I am often happy to share and talk about things, especially things that are vulnerable or things that are personal to me when they're completed. I do not enjoy talking about them after the fact, or I mean during, like while it's happening. And that mm-hmm. has been true. Like when I got my appendix out, I notified people after my appendix was out that my appendix was coming out. Like, but it felt very And like, I should have done a better job of alerting people in the city where I was living without any family or real support that like I was in the hospital removing my appendix.
Okay. Boundaries are good. I mean, I do have to say I follow you on social.
Yeah.
So I know you do share about knitting.
Yes,
Share about things like exercise when you're kind of getting back into a running routine or going to bar classes, not to say like I'm stalking you or anything, but I remember these details.
Yes.
That to me does seem like sharing process a little bit. So I want to poke back just slightly because it seems
okay.
In some cases, maybe you are sharing a little bit of this.
Yeah, that's true. Like I'm definitely open to sharing my ongoing struggles in becoming a runner.
Okay. What makes that different?
Yeah. I think part of it is that there's no explicit end goal for it.
Okay.
That there's no, like knitting is a little bit different, but knitting, one of the things that I love about it is that like right now, like this is a top that I'm working on and it's in process in that like I can't wear it, but it's also, it's stable. So like you can pick it up and see where I am. And like you can look in the pattern and see where it is. Mm-hmm. And so like the steps of it are very clearly marked. And like with exercise, I have ebbs and flows like everybody does where I'm on my game or I'm off my game. And I definitely have seasons where I feel like talking about it and seasons where I don't. But it's never some like goal. Like I'm not training for a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now I would really like to run this 5K in my town in September and I might get there and I might not. And in the past I might be like paralyzed by the idea that if I was sharing any of my in progress runs at all, I would like have to do the 5K. And I'm at a position and point in my life and journey with my exercise routine that if I walk half of that 5K, I don't care.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to run, walk that 5K. And the proportion is yet to be determined.
Mm-hmm. So a lot less pressure.
A lot less pressure for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't feel like something that's building towards an end product.
Okay. How does that relate to your business? Do you have an end product that the business will achieve?
No. The business is very flexible. And I think that's one of the things that I really like about it actually is that it's nimble and responsive and I can move it and shape it however I want to.
Okay. And how does the business relate to kind of the knitting part? Like obviously you don't have all the steps figured out. You don't always know where you are in the pattern.
Yeah, that's true. I think that the business feels kind of nebulous, but the products don't. And then I think that's where some of the disconnect is, that like Thrive PhD is an umbrella, feels like it's in progress and it's always going to be evolving. But like a writing group has a very definite like phase with like an end goal. Like eventually that writing group will be full of people and I will run it and then it will end. So, I could share about stuff, but yeah, it's this kind of like dual, I'm feeling pushback internally about it just because I don't have good language to describe what happens in that step two in between, like when it's ready to come out. And I do have like a chronic illness that sometimes flares, which is why I don't always commit to release dates that are very specific. And part of that is because I have a little bit of a problem in that last 20% getting it done. But some of that problem is often like last week I felt bad, just bodily bad and needed to slow down a little bit. And so having that flexibility, and I think that if I were to sort of build and be like, oh, this is coming in quarter four, I would feel very disappointed if it didn't come out in the first, you know what I mean? Like in quarter four,
mm-hmm.
like I was creating an opportunity for clients to no longer be able to trust me if it didn't come out when it said it was going to. And so it's easier to just announce things when they're done.
Can you share process without explicit timelines?
Yeah, I could.
I mean, I'm wondering about, you talked about the running, the no pressure.
Yeah.
You do. It's just, you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is, yeah.
What if this is the same when you share your process with your marketing? It's like, this is what it is. I don't always know what to call it. You know, like, but I'm going to talk about it and I'm going to share a screenshot of what I'm working on today. And like, I'm really excited. Like, if the emotion around it is something you can describe, maybe it doesn't matter so much if you can't really explain what exactly it is or when it's coming out, or
you're
just excited and it's fun.
Yeah. I guess it never occurred to me that I could. And I think part of it is that, like, because my exemplars are things like you, like your Instagram stories are very engaging to me, but I will often look at them and be like, wow, brains are so different.
Mm-hmm.
Word counts mean nothing to me. I wouldn't even know how to find out how many words I wrote today if I tried.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't mean that I don't write words. I very clearly do. I literally have no mechanisms to know how many or where. Like, I would be able to figure it out after the fact. And so I think part of it is that, like, when I think about hacking things, it never occurred to me to hack and then modify.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting though, because you're not a word count person.
Mm-mm.
Recently I've been sharing this, which is what you're referring to. I'm writing
a book,
so I'm sharing word counts just to catch people up.
Yeah.
What are you drawn to, given the fact that you don't care about word counts and that's not something you would ever do? What about that draws you in?
Why am I captivated by it?
Yeah, like you said, you like following those stories. Well, it's not about the word count part, because you don't
know,
you're not going to do that.
Well, part of it is just like, I have a lot of curiosity about how different brains work. Just and like, I like people sharing their processes, and it's this for the same reasons that I like watching Planet Earth. I'm just like, wow, that is a different kind of bird than me.
Right, like behind the scenes process stuff.
Yeah,
draws you in.
It does.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think that would draw people into following you too?
Maybe. Yeah. And there is like a little bit of vulnerability, because like I'm a very strange, I often feel like a weird bird. And so like if I were to sit down, like in one of our past episodes, we were talking about your morning routine, and I think like I'm drawn to and like following your post about what time you start walking every morning, and like you have the like kind of like time sticker on it.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to Instagram story my morning routine, it would be like, today I selected this rock to sit on my desk and be a reminder of this specific intention. I have collected this rock from my windowsill where I was charging it under the light of the full moon. And like, this is me as I journal about what it means to be in this specific full moon. And then I have drawn a tarot card to help focus some of that energy. And then I sit down and pay bills. So like, I often feel very, I rarely feel internally coherent, if that makes sense. Like, and I have learned not to question it, and I just kind of go with what feels like it resonates at the time. And, but because it's not public, it doesn't need to be coherent. It can just be me.
Hmm. What makes you think that it needs to be coherent to be public?
I don't know. Well, and part of it is that like there's certain amounts. So the pushback that I get, so I meet people in certain contexts, and like, if you were to go to my group of people that I knit with on Mondays, and then they were to say, and like you were to inform them that I, you know, I'm a person that like wrote a dissertation on the history of animals and like has a deep understanding of like animal law, they would be like, what? Not in a bad way, but in a very real, that does not feel like it belongs to the same patchwork quilt of like personality traits. Cause like at Knitting Circle, like I am gushing about gray yarn that I saw on Instagram. And then I am talking about like a variety of my very strongly held opinions about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And then I'm getting into arguments about Harry Potter. And so it's not that that's any more or less of a part of me, but I often feel then sometimes like I meet people in a business context and they're like, what do you mean that you have full moon rituals? And I'm like, well, one can do that and also have an Excel spreadsheet. Like,
yeah,
I am vast. I contain multitudes.
You just said the exact phrase that I was thinking in my mind, that you contain multitudes.
I do contain multitudes. And I think that I sometimes am very conscious about which multitudes go together and which ones don't.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I'm not opposed to any of it. And I've done a lot of work in therapy and stuff to kind of make it all feel coherent, that it all belongs to me. But I guess I'm realizing now that I have a variety of kind of like not explicitly named boundaries about what parts of me go in what spaces. Mm. And that might be what makes marketing such a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I want it to be authentic to me and my process, there's a lot in my process that has not yet made it to a variety of different platforms. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. What would it mean to you, Katie, to think about where you are right now with how you market your products as just one step on a longer evolution of where you're headed with your business, and that this is going to grow and change and develop as you feel more comfortable sharing your process, as you settle into your business and what you're providing for your clients, as you have a better understanding of the value you're offering?
Yeah, I mean, I'm having a two-part reaction where I'm like, yes, I feel very comforted by that. That is great. I don't have to nail it all the way down right now. But then I also feel the same sense of frustration that I feel anytime I realize that something that I'm grappling with is not going to be something that I solve once and then it's done forever.
Yeah, this does seem like echoing our first session that we had together, where you were like, this is not an easy solution. I was looking for one.
Well, and I think that that's just sort of my perfectionism, is that like I openly name myself as a perfectionist in recovery. I'm like, I often assume that things that are hard, if I just like work hard enough at them, I will arrive at a solution and then it will be done and I can move it to the done column and pick up a new, different challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And I often have a foot stomping moment when I realize that things like learning to be a human in the world is not just like a hard challenge that one works on and then they solve it and then they get to move on to something else.
Yeah. It is a practice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is all a practice. I mean, what would it mean to reframe marketing as a practice? Something you continue to come back to and learn new things and grow and evolve around.
That feels useful. I'll have to think about it. Because it is a pretty big mindset shift. And I think that there will have to be a little bit of grieving for the light at the end of the tunnel that I have used to convince myself, oh, lo, these many years.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually I will just be done marketing, in the same way that like Broadway actors or like actors of any kind, like at some point you reach a caliber of experience and kind of like skills where they call it like you don't have to audition for things. You're just like, you're called for the role.
Yeah.
And I think that I have used that as a false analogy, because even people who are called in for roles still have to do a variety of self-marketing and self-promotion.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't just sort of sit back and have things handed to you. Like there's networking. And so it looks different mm-hmm. at that level,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't mean it's not happening. And I've been using a false analogy to be like, eventually I will be able to just not do this anymore.
Mm-hmm. There is a grieving in letting that go.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to have to stop my feet about that.
I love that image.
Okay. Yeah.
I totally picture you doing it too.
Oh, I will 100% do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I totally see it. Okay. So Katie, today you were hoping for a little bit of a mindset shift and maybe to be energized about marketing. How are you feeling after this conversation?
I'm feeling like I have a bunch of new strategies to try, which is energizing for me. Like, I like having new things to try and new things to think about. I would not say that I'm 100% like chomping at the bit to like end this call and write a bunch of tweets right now.
Right.
But that was a lofty goal that was never really in the scope anyway. But I think that I have new ways to think about it that could lead to a variety of different ways to structure my time and structure my thinking differently. Mm-hmm. And I am hopeful that one or two of those will hit and be a fruitful path to walk for a while.
Mm-hmm. What's one kind of takeaway that you think you might try to implement from today's conversation?
I will start thinking about what it would mean to share my process, either to myself or to other people. Mm-hmm. I think that I will do some sort of like further exploration about why that feels so sticky to me and what it might look like to do it in a way that's true to me and not just sort of parroting somebody else's style.
Mm-hmm. Do it on your own terms.
Do it on my own terms. Yeah. That feels like a good solid takeaway to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Always a pleasure to coach you, Katie.
Yes. Always a pleasure to be coached by you, Katie.
All right. Until next time.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Coach to Coach. For any resources mentioned in the episode, check out the episode show notes at drkatielinder.com/coach. If you found this episode to be helpful, please take a moment to rate or review the show in Apple Podcasts or recommend this episode to a friend or colleague. Thanks for listening.